Children convert.
Oh, good question. The Shulchan Aruch, right? The children convert, he fulfilled Guru. Implying that they didn't convert, then no. The problem that statement is because even if they did convert, they're not officially related to their father. Because whenever someone converts, it's like considered a new person. Called Ger Shin Gaya Kikot and Shinola. Someone who converts like a new person. Person, so you're not related. So therefore, some of the commentaries say there's no need to convert. Even if the children did not convert, nevertheless, the fulfillment of the obligation is there. You have two children biologically, they related to you at the moment that you fathered them. Another important condition. Because you see in halacha, a non-Jew is related to a non-Jew. Interestingly, and unfortunately also common today, if a non-Jewish man quote married to a Jewish woman, we don't recognize the marriage at all, you learn. That's not a lot of marriage, you don't know, not really married. But married, not married. If a non-Jewish man produces a child through a Jewish woman, yes? Then? No. Then he's not the Kukuru. Amazing. A non-Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman, they have children. And then he converts and say, Rabbi, that fulfills for Rabu, the answer is yes. With the times, they were related to you. If a non-Jewish man was married, quote, married to a Jewish woman, and she convinces him to convert, they convert, the Rabbi, that fulfills for Rabu, the answer is no. Because you weren't related to that child even at the moment that he was born, by the father. But if you were Jewish and you were not Jewish, and he or she was Jewish. It's a remarkable mistake. Absolutely remarkable. Right. This matter of Puru Ruhu is a very serious mitzvah, we mentioned this last week. And,
sorry?
What about
a non-Jewish woman and a Jewish man?
Non-Jewish woman and a Jewish man, very good question. A Jewish man is married to a non-Jewish woman, unfortunately equally common. And they have a child. Is it still Puru Ruhu? The answer is no. Same reason, that the child is not related to him at the time that the child is born, or father. You know, they're not related. There's no fulfillment of Puru Ruhu. These questions are relevant to this day. Just today, someone came with the following question. Today, sitting in the yeshiva, and the rabbi was always the following question. A woman is not capable of having a child because whatever, she doesn't have the eggs, the ovaries don't produce, impossible. However, today's technology, no problem. You have, so there can be eggs from a different woman, and you know, in a test tube, and they insert it in the womb, carry the baby to term. Fine. I'm not sure it's fine, but let's assume if we know that it's fine. So what was the question that was asked me? It's not so fine, but whatever it is. I mean, I don't want to have a child. of cash over there. I think he doesn't want to divorce his wife and stuff that left me. The only guy, only chance that he stands of having his own child is a test tube baby with the eggs of someone else, and at least his wife will be able to host the baby. That's like a, okay, so she'll feel good that she, you know, born a baby to her. She'll feel good that the baby will carry his genes. And there'll be some anonymous donor who will facilitate all this by getting the eggs for the baby that they take out. Question. The rabbi comes up, this happened today. The rabbi had a Manhattan congregation. He wanted to know what kind of eggs should they find? Jewish woman or a non-Jewish woman? We will not consider it adultery because we just have a test tube. That's not, we don't consider that to be adultery. Moreover, let's assume the Jewish woman from the moment is single. So the baby can't possibly have any stigma if it's a child of a married man, and let's assume the mother is the genetic mother. The genetic mother is unmarried. There's no way, I can't imagine any which way to consider this child illegitimate. Because even if the man lived with this woman who produced the eggs, which would not have been allowed if she's single, the child still would not be stigmatized. It's not going to be stigmatized when it's done in a test tube.
The child can marry his brother
and sister. Oh, so now we're broke. Now there's a problem, which has been in print for 40 years, but in a different context. That's artificial insemination, the other way around. That's already a story, which is, I don't know how many years that's been going on, but there were responses about it for 40 years, so it must have happened to start before that. 100 years? 40 years ago, I know for a fact it existed. Right. 40 years I know that. Maybe it started earlier. I don't know. I just don't know when it started. I'm not history on it. Big question. We're not going to have that right this minute, which is, if a woman is inseminated from sperm of another man, would that be considered adultery? Would the child be considered signified? Would you call it a mamzer? Yes or no? That's a big dispute, which we'll maybe come to a little later. But here, it can't be, because what happened? Let's say they get eggs from a woman who's not married. That's right, so you can do that. And then the child is produced from the sperm of the man and this egg from the single woman. How can the child be a mother? It's impossible. I mean, then it's put into the woman's body, the wife, so that the strange man's, not strange, it's her own husband. There's no way to categorize this child as a mother. But the question, well, whose egg should be? Therefore, normally we say, always we like Jewish blood. We are very, we think very highly of ourselves, but we feel some shame that we're at the beginning, acting and strong. So, you know, we view otherwise, except for the rare exceptions, we think Jewish genes are good. Why import non-Jewish genes when we can use Jewish genes? That's our first reaction. But there are certain premonitions and fears. What will happen if there's a Jewish donor? The Jewish donor will, in effect, produce with this man, test to produce a child. And this Jewish donor will then proceed to get married, and he's single for the moment. He'll get married a year later. She'll have a child of the opposite gender from her husband. Now you have a half brother and sister running around not knowing they're related. 20 years down the pipe, bingo, love at first sight. After all, they have so much in common. They don't feel so much in common. And the same thing, of course, exists in the case of artificial insemination. The other way around, right? For this reason, most authorities, among those who allow it, many don't allow it at all, but among those who allow it, they prefer non-Jewish sperm. It's not the whole thing is distasteful, but this is even more distasteful. But nevertheless, this you solve the problems, and today we have two problems. One, because it's non-Jewish, there's no relatives. So you're not afraid of a brother marrying a sister. You're not part of the Jewish community. This is this biological father. That's two father. It's a rich father. Number two, you have automatically removed the stigma of illegitimacy of Mamzerus in this child. Because the halacha is, that a Jewish woman actually is adulterous and produces a child from a man other than her husband. So, that's the word, that's Mamzer, right? That's who he is. If he's Jewish, it's Mamzer. If he's not Jewish, the child is not a Mamzer. Halacha, believe it or not. Because she made it worse, right? She's married to Avram, and now she has a child with Yaakov. Wait, that's terrible. And child with John, okay, it's worse. No, it's not worse. I mean, I'm sure worse is not worse, because it's adultery is the same, but she has a child of Yaakov with a mouth, and the child of John is not a mouth. So for that reason, they prefer, as well, they prefer using the non-Jewish donors in this country. They always have ways of seeing to it that it's compatible, colors of the eyes, colors of the skin, they're different. That's the sperm banks. Have you ever been in a sperm bank? I'll tell you, I've never seen that foot. Well, I did. I'll tell you in a minute.
I just want to know if the child has to then be converted.
In which case are we talking about?
The non-Jewish mother the Jewish mother.
Let me answer your question. Maybe if you remind me, go back to my experience. If you have a non-Jewish egg, an egg of a non-Jewish woman, and it's used to produce a child in a test tube, and then put into the mother, the host mother, the obvious question comes up, who is the halachic mother? We know, we believe in matrilineal descent, that the child follows the mother, but who's the mother here? Is the mother the genetic mother, or is the mother the host mother? Well, in this case, the difference between this is not the child wants to go conversion. What's the other difference, right? Marrying a brother and sister, if the child is not Jewish, then maybe a genetic problem, the problem of children being, who knows, sometimes youth, it's a terrible thing, but in a lot of them, there will be no problem for the child, the child is not Jewish. If the other woman should have a child and convert, but there's still not a lot of things related. Well, I can't answer your question. Who am I to answer when the greatest rabbi of the time are fighting about? And it's a raging battle that's been going on now for a significant period of time, a year, I would say, concerning this very issue. And I must say, one of my friends is involved in this battle, so I'm a little bit hesitant to venture an opinion because I have a friend who's at the forefront of the battle. I have a friend named Rabbi Ezra Bick, who the Rebbe in Etzion. And he has written that he thinks that a genetic mother that counts. It's a kind of scientific approach. You know, I don't know why you might take such an approach, not an approach. I would have also thought that approach intuitively. Genetic mother is a mother, so that's where the baby comes from, really. But two other rabbis argued with him, and they're also great rabbis. One is Rabbi Leif from Manhattan. One is Rabbi Zalman Lechevi Goldberg from Jerusalem. So, you know. And then put the other rabbis on both sides. Now the latest round. They say the host mother is a mother. Or they both are mothers. So now that can be called the Kurban on both ends. Strip on both ends. So who needs all this? Just get the Jewish mother. If you get the Jewish mother, you're going to get in trouble. Who's the mother? You get a Jewish egg, so now the Rachel or the Leah. Who is it? Either way, I don't know who the mother is. Whether it be the host mother or the non-Jewish or Jewish egg donor. You're not going to know. The answer is, so let me think about it. So my first reaction would be, well, it's better to have the non-Jewish mother, the same reason we mentioned before when it comes to the non-Jewish quote father. And then the rabbi told me, and another rabbi spoke to him and said, wait a minute, he doesn't look like to do it to this non-Jewish egg. Why? Because it reads a halacha which says that a man is not permitted to have his seed spilled for no reason. It's called al tzar zera levatov. This is what's called in the onanism. Is that the right word? Makes an onanism. We'll read about it in a few weeks in the Chumash. Everything's from the Bible. So, this rabbi suggested as follows. So, if there's artificial insemination for the purpose of procreation of the mitzvah puruvu, so we assume it's okay. On what basis? That's a big fish. You know, how do you do that? So the answer is based on the Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara in Yevamos says that if there was a man who there was a doubt about it, whether he was able to produce children, and maybe he was even in a category, well, just had a low sperm count. Low sperm count, he had to get married. There was a possibility that he was what we call in biblical terms a tzua daka. I mean, his reproductive organs were maimed by an accident. And as such, she's not even permitted to marry. Such a person cannot marry. We'll get to that elsewhere. Everything in the whole issue, I thought we went through a, for example, now how these operation, vasectomies, big problem. And now the problem with the prostate surgeries, they often cut the vas. Where's the vast membrane, right? Infection. Where they come in, starting out, starting on this, starting on that. There's a whole rabbinic literature about all these things. Age literature. Anyway, so in order, the general rule in a certain particular defect, which the rabbi spoke about in the Yevamos, was, well, if he can ejaculate normally, then he's okay. How you know? You have to demonstrate. It's crazy, that's crazy to us. I'm almost seeing. Well, they do it in the clinics, so they have to do it to demonstrate to the doctors will tell the rabbis, I guess, that he's capable. So the little question is, what's going on? This is such a terrible prohibition. So the answer is given, wait a minute. The reason why it's prohibited, basically, the main reason is because it goes against the idea of procreation. But in this case, it's the other way around. If he's not able to prove his ability to marry the Jewish people, he'll never be able to procreate. It's only this quote-unquote experiment which will enable him to procreate. On this basis, many rabbis have said that if you have to go to a doctor, a fertility clinic, and they ask for what they call a sperm sample, it's permissible to procure it, even though it's ordinarily done in a way that's ordinarily not allowed. What can you do? They don't do this, they don't test it under a microscope, they can't tell you what the problem is, and then they can make certain drugs and certain procedures and certain therapies. Well, certain, you know, what they call whatever they do, they press, whatever it may be, they launder it, they have all kinds of wild things that go on in science fiction. But they can't do any of this stuff if they know what the problem is. So most authorities say it's mutter on the ground is for the purpose of procreation. The whole discussion among the Mepharshim today, well, how do you do it? So the recommendation given by some rabbis together, what they call a condom. Not the one you buy in the drugstore, but that sort of stuff. I'm not going to tell you much about the man's ability to follow the child. But they have, and I've actually recommended this to certain people, they have a certain product that's used. Why? They don't make it commercially, but apparently without any spermicide, and you use that, and they collect it, and they're able to analyze. This, by the way, after, there's a different way to do it. It's called a post-coital examination. That's a better way, of course, for them to collect the seed comes out in a natural way. But that then it mixes up the body fluids, so it doesn't have a perfect sample. But that fails to give the proper clinical results. They do the laboratory, you go to the next step. P.S. is the pulsive station that make a hole in the condom. At least the left can make a hole, in fact, you know, it's defeating the whole purpose. Not that it's a contraceptive, but the reason why they make the hole is that at least some of it there could theoretically penetrate it and go into the uterus of the woman. So I've had a case like this. I've actually had situations, really, for real. But I want to tell you, I might call it a heartwarming story. A student of mine, married for a number of years, and the doctor said he was the test, of course, spoiler, that was not going to be able to have children, and they said that they wanted out of, you never know, that they want to, bed test. There's a whole discussion of whether you can use a condom and do it in the jar. The yeshiva book, I mean, it's gone crazy. Completely crazy. What should you do? I told him to do this, you should do this, and we're discussing back and forth. John told me 3 weeks later, the Rebbe, you're not going to leave. And what? My wife is pregnant. The day after they said it can't happen, and nothing, and there's no sperm counter. So, you know, you have to be very careful before you don't give up so easily. This is an important lesson for me. You used to cry in the phone, just grieve before, no, I'm ready. Okay, anyway, they got 3 children. Anyway, So now what Rabbi said, that's all true, whether you do all these things, when it's going to lead to a technical fulfillment appropriation, which means when you father a child, it means you a Jewish man and the woman is a Jewish woman, you father a child at appropriation. And let's assume that if it's done in a test-tube fashion, whatever fashion, it's all appropriation. But this Rabbi says, if you're going to use a donor, a female donor, produce a non-Jewish egg, and this non-Jewish egg will then be placed into the host mother, who is Jewish, not a good question. What right does the husband have in the first place to ejaculate this zera should be used in order to impregnate an egg which is not Jewish? So this question is it's a fact, then it's theoretical. It's Leviathan. I have a question today. And it's a two-level question to question. If you assume that the child who will be born will be eventually Jewish or not Jewish, we still don't know that. That we don't know the answer to. Some say it'll be Jewish eventually because the host mother will be Jewish, and some say it'll be not Jewish. This rabbi who was talking and was working with the assumption the child basically is going to be Jewish at the end because he followed the host mother. But nonetheless, that's the end. But right now, the seed is going to be mixed in a test tube with a non-Jewish egg. So then maybe you have no right to do that, and then the baby will ultimately go into a Jewish mother's womb, and maybe be Jewish at the end. And so then it's not going to be Jewish at the end. My intuition. Isn't it a remarkable question? Now by being proved and saying he's a non-Jewish egg, then maybe you're being, you know, lenient and allowing something which shouldn't be allowed, that the seed should be spilled, if you will, and not for the purpose of a full procreation. That's really different. If you would use a Jewish donor for the egg, and the child would be Jewish, and the father, the man, the husband, would be fulfilled, presumably, if it's appropriation. But if it's a non-Jewish egg, it's hard to imagine fulfilled appropriation, even if the child would be Jewish at the end. Because it happened to be put into a Jewish mother. I don't know, it's like science fiction. How can it be? It can't be a Jewish seed mixed with a non-Jewish egg. So at that moment, nothing happened. You put it to a host mother who's Jewish and a child will be considered Jewish and then he fulfilled for a room. It's the brave new world, literally. You can't look in the books at these questions. Very little present. Two things. Number one, not all people accept it. maybe only Ashkenazim, the Jews Ashkenazim, maybe the child is not really fully accepted. And then it says that the text communication was only promulgated until the end of the fifth millennium. The fifth millennium ended in the year 1240. 755 years ago. According to the Shulchan Aruch, it seems that the last 755 years is bigger than this. So it seems. But don't jump into conclusions. The prevailing consensus is that this is absolutely prohibited, and that the prohibition exists to this day. Yes, there are some people today that do watch. To this day, Sparta, who didn't accept it, when they moved to the land of Israel, they had to flee for their lives from the Arab countries in the 50s. They enacted what they called today, these days, the grandfather clause. They called the grandmother clause, they say, I don't recall it. Someone, the Sephardic rabbis realized that having two wives in the state of Israel is not going to be a very good idea. If you come with a second wife from Yemen or from Iraq, you can keep it. But if you want to take a second wife now, you're not. Maybe quite a few years ago, but I guess they're probably no more left.
Never heard of it.
Never heard
of it?
No.
Not
the common of
many, but
the other. Well, now it's, you know, not many of them are still alive. They came with two wives in 1949, 50, now 45 years later. We wish I just lived 120 years, but you know. principle of Jewish law that we have to know the paternity and maternity of the child. And that this allows, obviously, two husbands, same topic, it's called polygamy is permissible, and polyandry is the word we answer as a male. Polyandry is prohibited. The truth is, it's not just a law. principle of Jewish law that we have to conserve the eternity of the child. That this allows, obviously, two husbands, same topic, it's called polygamy is permissible, and polyandry, that's the word we use, andros and males. Polyandry is prohibited. The truth is, it's not just a law of the Bible, but apparently this is true in society at large, even though society didn't accept the Bible. Everyone accept the Bible? All the civilization would all accept the Bible. Even though they did not accept the Bible.
Didn't your family have testing? Yeah, we had testing before. They just produce the testing, that's the end. I'm not mistaken, I think the father of this young lady is even a doctor. I'll just speak one doctor, speak to another, and then finish. That's what happened at the end. They make them go to go more testing, and they happily marry, and make the ship really, hopefully, really blessed at the right time with healthy children. But not without the trauma that went into the pre-engagement period of time. It was tottering, and I had to try to steady things. And again, I don't want that in the follow-up case. Unbelievable case. It goes back, I would say, probably 15 years. A young man, student of mine, also a doctor. So he was a doctor.